Welcome back to Housewarming, your inside look at real Irish homes transforming for a greener energy future. I'm Kim Buckley, and this week we're chatting to a man we all know and love who's been designing homes on our TV screens for nearly two decades and is a fan of a big window. Of course, I'm talking about architect and TV presenter Dermot Bannon. And he joins me in this episode to look at the role of the architect when it comes to a home energy upgrade. As he points out, architects are part of every aspect of a building, from its fabric to windows and doors, insulation and heating systems. I also chatted to Dermot about how grants, be yours, and other incentives have changed how we all think about energy efficiency. I got some great tips on how to incorporate elements like heat pumps in a way that doesn't take away from your style. And of course, we talked about Dermot's famous glass box extensions. We then head off to Cork, where I sat down with Jerome O'Donovan in his three-bedroom bungalow in Blackrock. With a deep retrofit to his house, he brought it up to an A1 rating, as energy efficient as it's possible to make a house. He tells us what he learned from the experience and gives us a tour of his beautiful home. First though, let's catch up with Dermot. Dermot Bannon, thank you so much for joining us on Housewarming. You're very welcome here. So this is a podcast about home energy upgrades, and we have spoken to homeowners all over the country. We've spoken to interior designers, engineers, builders. Where does the architect
Are you leaving
come
the architect to last? Is
the best to last.
The best to last.
Where does the architect come in terms of doing this home energy upgrade? We know what everyone else's role is, but what part does the architect play?
Oh my God, it's what part don't we play?
Okay.
I suppose we design everything in a building, from its fabric, selecting windows, to specifying the insulation, to specifying the heating system, to locating the heating system, to designing where your heat pump is going to go, where your heat pump boiler is going to go. It's everything, really. Mm-hmm. And I suppose if you're upgrading a house or retrofitting a house, is it a period house? What is the finish on the outside? Is it a brick? So that will curtail what kind of insulation you use. Mm-hmm. So every decision we make on a build is to do with its BER, its energy efficiency, its carbon footprint. And it goes deeper than that, I suppose. Now you're looking at, it's the carbon trail. Like, we're, you know, is timber better than concrete? Is blockworks? Like, as an architect, when we go to conferences and we have chats, it is all about that. What materials should we be using? It's so ingrained in what we do. Like, I remember, like, I was in college a long time ago, and we had week-long kind of symposiums in college, and we did projects, and they were all about sustainability. So it was all about kind of reducing our carbon footprint.
So that's been ingrained in you then the whole time, even from college.
One of the things that frustrates me a little bit is a lot of people think it's a really nice thing to do. Like, we'd love to make it an A rating, and it's kind of like, we'll go either for an A rating or a walk-in wardrobe, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And whereas for me, it's kind of a fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a responsibility to this planet, what we build. Like, I think it's our buildings are the biggest carbon emitters of everything in this country. So it's hugely important what we build, how we renovate, how we retrofit. Shortcuts mean that a building is going to fail in 3 or 4 years' time. So yeah, it's in everything, every decision we make on a design. I'm just trying to think of like, even layouts and all that. Like, you're designing plant rooms into the middle of it to take all of your heat recovery, and then the building fabric. You've got your air tightness, you've got your windows, mm-hmm. you've got your insulation. It's everything.
So it's front of mind then, as opposed to how it's going to look, how they're going to live there.
Yeah.
So the energy efficiency
is more
say?
Important than the aesthetics.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because that's your building fabric. Like, yeah. The first rule in design is that form follows function. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that your plan works, so that your rooms are connected the right way, that your so you have to get all the kind of the workings of the house. But a huge part of the workings of the house is the building fabric, and how that performs. Even right down to, like, what a lot of people don't consider in, and I get slagged about this a huge amount, is solar gain. And so, like, you're trying to keep the heat in, but you're also trying to keep the heat out in the summer, and overhangs and south facing glass. So even when you're designing what I'm known for, the big glass boxes, like you'll put a lot of your glass on the east and the west, not on the south. Like, you're calculating all the time. It's about, like, if you have a lot of glass in the wrong place, you lose a load of heat out through it. And also you gain heat during summer. And it's equally important not to be kind of cooling a building.
Yeah.
You know, so it's at the forefront in everything that you do.
Okay. You mentioned it. I was going to bring up the windows later on in our conversation, but let's go there now.
Go there now. Yeah.
We all know you love a big window.
I do love a big window, yes.
And a lot of people who are living in A-rated homes find that they're too warm. And the windows then, if the sun is coming in, especially if it's south facing, they're complaining that it's too hot.
Yes.
What are their options?
A canopy. You need some kind of an overhang. Like, if you've got a lot of south facing glass, you need some kind of a shading. So what you want to do is you want to get the heat gain. So like, there's energy in the sun. So what you want to do is get that in the winter. So when the sun is higher in the summer, I hope everybody knows. Well, they don't know this because they don't even. I did an interview with somebody recently, and I was asking them which way is north, south, east, or west, and they turned around to me and they said, "I don't know. I'm not a pirate." And but it also, not only does the sun move from the east in the morning,
yep,
to the west in the evening, it also from spring, summer, autumn, winter, it rises.
Yep.
And then it's high in the summer, low in the winter. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine, the sun is really, really high in the sky. A canopy over your window is going to stop the sun, the direct, yeah, sunlight coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it gets lower in the winter, it'll get in underneath the canopy, penetrate into the house, and then you've got lovely warm sunshine heating the room.
Okay.
So it's about overhangs, canopies. A lot of people are putting blinds inside, but what happens then is the heat gets trapped between the blind and the glass. It's in your house.
Yeah.
It's already in.
Yeah.
You have to stop the heat before,
okay,
it gets in.
Okay.
So the trick is, but like, there's lots of, like, look at commercial buildings, like, and you'll see these little louvers on the outside. Like, there's simple things that, yeah, you can do to stop the heat gain.
So, but don't be afraid of a big window.
Don't be afraid of a big window, but that's not necessarily true. Like, but just be careful. Like in the direct southern sun, mm-hmm, it is going to be warm in the summer. So, you know, limit, I wouldn't be putting a 10 meter long window facing south because, you know, that is going to overheat. So,
yeah,
you can do it east-west, or be selective, mm-hmm, or just put in, if you've got an amazing view over a mountain, all on the south side, just put a deep overhang over your house.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing that now because they're putting these outdoor garden rooms or pergola or some kind of, like, there's so, like, okay, shading. You can put a canopy. You can put a much deeper overhang of the roof, or even just a simple pergola,
mm-hmm,
with louvers on it, and that anything that will start to like a tree would,
yeah, yeah,
you know, that will create dappled light. And so every time you don't have to be completely in shadow. You could have light coming through it, but it doesn't. But if you block off half the light, you're blocking off half the energy, the overheating energy that's coming into your house.
Okay. And you mentioned it, that even in college you were learning about sustainability. So it's, yeah, been with you your entire career. But I suppose you were trying to bring clients on board then back in the day, maybe, or back when you started out in your career. Has that changed now? And are your clients more on board with energy efficiency? Is that something that's important to them? Or do you think they're still more preoccupied with how their home is going to look?
Ooh, like, I can answer that honestly, or I can answer that...
Honesty, please.
Honestly. There are grants available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's a little bit like, would you, when you go and do your shop, right, would you ask the person behind the checkout, can I have 10 plastic bags, please?
No.
Why?
Because I have to pay for them.
And would you feel slightly like, if everybody sees me going out with these plastic bags, that I don't care about the environment?
Possibly.
Yeah. It's kind of like a drug, isn't it? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
buying drugs when you buy a plastic bag. Like, the money isn't that much. Like, they're 20 cents.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I would pay the 20 cents rather than carry everything in my hands,
yeah,
out,
yeah,
to the car in the lashing rain.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel bad for buying it.
Yeah.
Once there's money involved,
yeah,
we change everything as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So now that there's grants available and everybody knows there's grants available, now they mightn't know how to get them or how to avail them, but
mm-hmm,
now that they know that, it has brought the awareness of energy efficiency, BERs, to the forefront. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things have happened over the last... to be honest with you, if I was to answer this honestly, 10 years ago, people didn't care less. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a nice to have, but like, I don't want to lose a walk-in wardrobe or walk-in pantry to mm-hmm. pay for energy upgrades to my house.
Yeah.
Some people, it was important to them, but for the general population, mm-hmm. if I can afford it, I'll do it. If I can't, I won't. But now... the grants have been brilliant in bringing it to the forefront of conversations when people are upgrading homes. And it is one of the first things when I get clients into the office and they sit down around the table. Yes, we want to get our house up to an A rating. Like mm-hmm. it's on everybody's wish list now,
yeah.
which is brilliant. So it's in the conversation. But what's driving that is grants mm-hmm. and knowing that there's grants available for it. And also another thing that has driven it, I think, in the last few years is that if somebody was buying or selling a house 10 years ago, they didn't care what the B or rating was.
Yeah.
They cared where it was, mm-hmm. how big it was, how many mm-hmm. bedrooms, how many bathrooms,
yeah.
and its location. Now, people understand that if a house is, I don't know, a low D rating or to get that up to an A rating is going to cost them a certain amount of money. So people are putting value on a house that is already an A rating.
And when you go
rating.
On to Daft, it's there, like in the
and
like
they are reading
with the
that,
main picture.
They're reading that now. Yeah. The reason they're reading that is because they can see, okay, if that's an F rating, I'm going to have to spend a fortune mm-hmm. to get that up to an A. So if there's two houses for sale on one street, the one that is the A or the B rating is going to sell a lot quicker mm-hmm. than the ones because it's already done. And
yeah.
people are putting a value onto that. So I think there's a value in your BER now that mightn't have been there before. And again, all the money, all the banks and all the lenders are giving interest rates, are giving much lower interest rates if
yeah.
your BER is...
the green mortgages.
Green mortgage. So people are aware of all that and they vote with their pockets.
Yeah, because they're also going to save money then on their bills.
They're going to save money on their... Yeah. But it is, they know that they're entitled to grants and they know that they'll get a cheaper mortgage and they know that if they ever, as an investment, that they don't have to pump the money into that. So money has driven energy efficiency and BERs to the top of people's wish list.
And that's something that is growing, I suppose. When you have clients coming in, it's frequently asked then that they want their house to be warmer and they're not just concerned about, you know, a nice kitchen and a nice bathroom. I know, but they are, of course. But it's all, you know, a holistic approach to it.
Exactly. And they're questioning about insulation. They're questioning about U values. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't know what it means, but they'll ask the question. They're questioning about what's a heat pump.
Yeah.
That's the new thing now.
Yeah,
that was, you remember years ago, what's a tracker mortgage?
Yes,
now the new thing is what's a heat pump?
Yeah.
So these are questions that we're talking about
in
the office at project level, which nobody spoke about 10 years ago.
Okay, that's brilliant. That's great to hear. And speaking of heat pumps, they're not the most attractive piece of kit. And, you know, the solar panels and, you know, it's not very...
Poor little heat pumps.
It's not very aesthetic when we're talking about heat pumps, insulation. How are you marrying energy efficiency with how the home looks, with aesthetics, with design?
Have you watched Room to Improve?
Of course I have.
Do you think they look ugly?
They look fabulous.
We have heat pumps everywhere.
Yeah. Where are you putting them and how are you hiding them?
Well, I suppose you've got, with a heat pump, right, you've got two units. You've got your external unit and you've got your internal unit. The external unit, you just need to be clever in your garden. Okay, so obviously I'm famous for the big glass walls at the back. So that's your view out to the garden. I have one in my garden mm-hmm. and it's really close to the house and you can't see it. We have a cleverly placed bamboo mm-hmm. Thing, but then when you're out in the garden, you walk past it. It is just a unit. It's like I don't see it really anymore. It's not in my. I don't walk by. Oh, yeah. I hate that. It's so if you're straight on looking at it, you can see it because you have to be able to leave it clear. But there's planting all around it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people see them after a while.
Yeah.
It's like people put cars in their driveway and they don't see that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a tree.
Yeah.
So I think the outdoor unit, I think with clever planting and clever positioning, mm-hmm. But think about it, like, and don't leave it till the last minute because lots of people do. So they'll design their house and they'll have a lovely view out to the garden and then the heat pump goes in and they haven't considered planting around it or where their patio goes mm-hmm. or it could end up on the patio. Like there is a fan with some of them and it like they're not noisy.
yeah.
at all. Mm-hmm. Like, but what sometimes the fan can go and there can be a bit of air. Just don't locate it right on your patio. Locate it in amongst a kind of, if there's a lawn or something like that. Like, mm. and again, in
or
small
a side passage maybe.
Yeah, or like they can go anywhere. Yeah. But just think about where they go. The internal one is the hardest one because people. We're putting utility rooms into houses all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And generally, a utility room was always big enough, as long as it had enough space for a washing machine, a dryer, maybe a little sink. But actually, the heat pump units are a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. So you need to leave a little bit more space inside. But then we're spreading them out now. We're putting them under stairs. We're putting and
because they're the size of a fridge, kind of, aren't
about
they?
About the size of a fridge, yeah. And you'll get a little pump with it.
Yeah.
So just plan it in.
Yeah, put it in the cupboard.
Don't have designed a utility room that is big enough just for your washing machine or dryer, because then when the plumber arrives and says I need to put my heat pump unit in here, the entire room is gone. Mm-hmm. So you just need to leave a little bit more space. It is as you said, it's only the size of a fridge. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't design your utility room to take an extra fridge, you're scuppered. So mm-hmm. you have to build this all in at the beginning. The benefits then to a heat pump, right? So you're talking about the aesthetics of it, right? Cleverly placed plants in the garden can completely conceal it. A plant room or a space for your indoor unit that's big enough to take something the size of a tall fridge freezer, mm-hmm. you're done, you're sorted. What you don't get with underfloor or with a heat pump is you don't get radiators. In generally, if you're doing a big retrofit in your house, all of your ground floor can be underfloor heating. Yeah. That frees up walls. It allows you to create an open plan space. Mm-hmm. It allows you to take down walls between, say, the old dining room and the kitchen, so you've got a nice kind of kitchen dining room. It frees up a huge amount of wall space. Mm-hmm. Because you don't need to put radiators in. Now you will, if you're retrofitting your house, you will need to put radiators upstairs, but they can generally go back into where, you mm-hmm. know, in bedrooms under the windows
yeah.
and all of that.
Yeah.
But it really frees up how a house looks mm-hmm. on the ground floor.
Okay.
So there's an advantage.
Yeah, and it's going together with design. Like the energy efficiency, if it wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to put it under the floor. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And people are also concerned about losing space with insulation inside. Is that something people should be concerned about?
No. Like, no. It's you lose what? Depends on how long your fingers are, right? I've short, chubby fingers. But half a finger.
Yeah.
Like, to be warm.
Yeah, and you're not going to miss it.
No.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as long as it, okay, sometimes in really old kind of period properties and stairs are really narrow, you have to be a little bit clever about how you insulate around that, because losing half a finger off a very, very narrow space, that can actually, it means that it doesn't meet building regs anymore. Or, mm-hmm. But generally, like, insulating, if you're externally insulating, you don't notice it at all.
Yeah.
Internally, it's a small amount. And it's only off the rooms that have an external wall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like if you have a living room in, say, a three-bed semi, it's only the front wall is external. The rest are all internal walls.
Yeah.
So you're not losing any space. Honestly, I'd much rather a smaller house and a warmer house
yeah.
any day. Don't
yeah.
a big house or bigger rooms but that are cold, no thanks.
For people who might have a renovation project 5 years down the line, they're mm-hmm. after their new homeowners, their first time buyers, and their house is really, really cold,
mm-hmm.
what can they do that's not going to, you know, break the bank, and it's not going to, you know, it's going to maybe make the house look and feel a little bit better? What can they do to make it feel cozier and warmer?
Oh, well, there's a rule when it comes to designing buildings to make them more energy. So lots of people just start off with things like the windows. And actually, that's number three or number four on the list. The first thing you should do is insulate the house. It's to do the things that you're not going to undo again. So, first and foremost, okay, you've just bought a house and you can't afford to renovate it for 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would, if you can afford to, get some drawings done and get your plan done for 5 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that you're going to knock down a couple of walls or you're going to reconfigure the ground floor or you're going to put a little bit of an extension onto it, I would get a drawing done of what you want to do in 5 years' time. And then I would drop a list of stuff. So first and foremost is insulating your walls. That's the biggest surface area of your house. So if you're going to put an extension on in a couple of years' time, maybe you don't have to spend as much on insulating the back wall
mm-hmm.
of the house, because that's going to be coming down.
Okay.
Or if you're going to take down, say, the rooms, say, the the wall between the kitchen and the living, the dining room. Maybe just leave provision that you're going to continue that insulation going the whole way through. So, so start off with a plan, and then you start, number one, with your walls, insulating your the building fabric, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's your attic space. That's actually number two.
Yeah.
Okay. So the heat rises and goes up there. So spend the money on insulating. And then after that, if you're changing your windows, but only change the windows that you know you're going to keep.
Mm-hmm.
So if you might be just if you're putting an extension onto the back of the house, there's no point in changing all the windows in the house because you're going to be getting rid of them in 2 or 3 years' time anyway. So maybe just do the front windows. So just like save money by not undoing work, by not having to do something twice.
And think ahead.
Think ahead. And so get your plan done.
Yeah.
Have your master plan
done.
That's
amazing advice. I've never heard that advice before. No, to
I just thought that's the simplest thing.
But not to, to maybe think of it, but
that's like going into town to do your Christmas shopping or whatever. We shouldn't really be talking about that. But going with no list. With no list.
Yeah.
Or not, and just wandering aimlessly around the shops. Okay. But like people do that. Look, they do it in every part of construction. Like I see them wandering aimlessly around tile stores and they're, what are you looking for? We're just looking to see what we... you need to have a plan, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to have a plan.
And if people are more aware about sustainability and energy efficiency at home now than they were 10 years ago, what will make more people get on board?
I suppose an awareness of again, it's back down to financials. It's an awareness of the grants that are available and getting that out there. Lots of people will come to me and they'll say, oh, my house didn't qualify. It does qualify. You're just not going through a one-stop shop. You're not... You know, it's kind of still raising that awareness. And I suppose like the whole, the SEII grant system is in its infancy in the public domain. And I and the one-stop shops, we could possibly would do with doubling the numbers of one-stop shops because, or just being more inventive in how we do it, because there is a pot of money there to be spent. Like we as a nation have money to spend to upgrade our homes to meet our targets by 2030. So there is money there. We just need to get it to the right people at quickly. And I suppose like a lot of the projects that I do, the realm that I'm in is renovations, and people are knocking down a wall or maybe putting a small extension onto it. And that can be harder because there's only so many one-stop shops will do renovation work. So I think if we can increase the numbers of that, and like
there's more and more coming on board all the time.
There is. And so it's and just raising an awareness. But there's also other routes. Like there's some of the energy providers are training up contractors. So they'll, you can go and do a 1 day course or a 2 day course, whatever, and become registered under the energy providers. And then you can go and do a renovation. So there's lots of different ways. But I think just getting the information out to people, if you are doing any works to your home, I wouldn't do anything to my house. Like I would not put an extension onto my house. I wouldn't knock down two walls without doing everything that I possibly can to make it more energy efficient first. I wouldn't spend a penny on extra space. And if that ate up my entire budget, so be it.
Okay.
I would put that as the top of my priority list. Okay. So I think that, and for people to, with that then, any project that you're going to do in your house, make sure you know exactly what grants are available and that you're, because it does make a difference and it does chip into, it really does help with the budget.
So you heard it from Dermot. If you're thinking of renovating, do the energy upgrades before anything else. There's lots more in my interview with Dermot, but you'll have to come back later in the season for that one. Now we're heading off to Cork to catch up with Jerome. Jerome, we're here in Blackrock in your lovely new home. Describe it for us, for people who can't see where we are.
Okay, it's a bungalow, 3-bedroom bungalow with a sitting room and a kitchen stroke dining room stroke TV room. So it's nice and compact and it suits me down to the ground.
And how many bedrooms do you have?
3 bedrooms.
Lovely. Yeah. And who lives here with you?
I live here and my 2 daughters. I have 3 daughters. One is in Australia. And I have my eldest and my youngest are living here with me.
In their teens or 20s?
In their 20s and in their 30s.
Lovely. So it's a busy house.
It's a busy house, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's grand. It's fine. I mean, the house is big enough to accommodate 3 of us.
Lovely.
So it's fine.
And it's a new home. This is a new start for you and your family here in Blackrock.
Yeah. I mean, I bought the house last September. And we moved in after some works in February. Okay. The house was built in about 2004, so it's still a relatively modern house, But yeah, we're here now since we moved in February.
Very good. Okay, so you were living in your mum's house prior to this and it was cold. And what was it like living in a drafty, cold house that you had to keep the heating on during the winter?
It was expensive to keep it heated, very expensive, but particularly then when the Ukraine-Russia war started, obviously energy costs just skyrocketed. And with the attic converted into bedrooms. So it wasn't really well insulated. Once you turn the heat off, you'd notice it straight away. Mm-hmm. So, I would describe it as a cold house. That's all I could really describe it as. You know.
And, I suppose, what was it like waking up in the morning, first thing in the winter? Was it freezing? Like, did you have to set the timer? Did you have to wear extra jumpers? Or did you just pay the heating bills? Or how did
all,
you...
All of those.
All of the above.
All of those, yeah. I mean, wake up in the morning, in the very cold weather, we had the heating on, yes, mm-hmm. on a timer. But the house generally was cold and we heated a certain number of rooms downstairs, which we were pretty much living, like the kitchen, conservatory, sitting room area, and that was fine. But when the heat was off, you'd notice the cold straight away.
And I suppose living in a cold home, if it was just you on your own, you might just put on an extra jumper. But there's other people there. Your kids are there. You have to keep it nice and warm.
Yeah, you have to keep it warm. Look, you get used to it. It becomes just part of everyday life. Yeah, you just put up with it. You put on extra clothes if you had to do it. It is nice, as I have found out since I arrived here, to come into a nice warm house. Mm-hmm. And once I've got used to it now, it'd be hard to go back, I must admit.
And what motivated you to move then to this home? Your mother's home was sold then?
Well, no, it hasn't been sold, but it will be sold. So that was coming down the tracks and I always knew that. So I was always looking out for a house or an apartment even. And ideally in the Black Rock area where I'm from and I've lived most of my life. So this route where we are now is on a walking route that I would do, which would go down to the marina, mm-hmm. And down to Black Rock Village. And I just noticed this house on my walk. I always thought it was a nice house. You know, it was an attractive house. You do see these houses on occasions. Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, that's nice. And then one day I saw for sale sign up. So, yeah, it was... It was great. I was delighted. Now, the other problem, of course, was that house prices in the area were just escalating, and escalating beyond my reach, to be honest with you. But as it turned out, this was... the price was something I could afford. So I went for it and I managed to procure it.
Amazing. Congratulations. So that's fairly recent. So it's a whole new start now.
Yeah.
And did you ever think you might live in it before doing the work, or was that something that was a conscious decision to do it before you moved in?
No, I decided that I would do the work before I moved in, because I know I'm an engineer, I'm a structural engineer. It's easier not to be living in a building when you're doing works. It's just easier on everybody. And as it turned out, we did a lot of works, a lot of external works initially, which would have been very disruptive. Then if we were living here with having builders in and out, it would have been a nightmare, to be honest with you.
So you stayed, yeah, you stayed in your mum's house while
better off staying. I wasn't under any pressure to move out. So better off staying in the house I was in until all the works were done.
And was it emotional leaving your mum's house?
Not really, no. I was only there for 4 years. More emotional leaving the family house a number of years ago.
So this is your new home now.
Mm-hmm.
And you got all of your work done before you moved in. And when you first got the keys to the house and you decided you wanted to put the work in before you moved in, what was your first step? And did you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work that may or may not have to be done?
No, I really wasn't overwhelmed, because I suppose of the nature of what I've been doing all my life in construction. Mm-hmm. So it is something that I would be able to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do get frustrated on occasions, mm-hmm. but I mean, yes, I've been dealing with this sort of activities all my life. So, no, I wasn't overwhelmed by what was in front of me, no.
Were you like, oh, here we go, have to do a renovation, or were you excited? How did you feel?
Yeah, you would. I know, of course I was excited. I mean, I love building works, mm-hmm. and seeing the end product is fantastic, to go from, you know, a house which needs work to a house which is nicely finished, or a building which needs work and is nicely finished, is always very exciting, you know, and satisfying when it's done. So
what was your first step then? Who did you contact, and how did you know who to contact, or did you just go onto the website and pick the first one?
First step really was, I suppose, just a bit of research, Googling, you know, energy saving measures, what government grants were available, I made contact with several one-stop suppliers, and I spoke to several of them, and I obviously settled with Envirobead, who did the work for me. And the reason I went with them was I had worked with them, I had knowledge of them in the past in construction. So again, familiarity is great. I knew the company. I didn't know some of the individuals, but I knew the company. And so that's why I decided I would row in with them.
Okay. And when you got your assessment done and they told you everything that needed to be carried out for your home to be energy efficient, mm-hmm. were you surprised by the amount of work that needed to be done, or was there less? Was there more?
I wasn't surprised by the amount of work that was to be done. No, that didn't surprise me, because I guess a lot of it, I suppose the windows and doors I thought might have been okay, but the assessment pointed out that they weren't, that they were you know, back in, they were 2004 vintage, mm-hmm. so they needed to be replaced to actually get your BER rating up. So that was one thing that probably surprised me a small bit, but you know, not hugely, I must admit.
Okay.
But the rest of the works, no, it didn't surprise me. I guessed.
So your BER when you moved in was a
D1.
D1. And yeah. Now it's
an A1.
Great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So what did they do, and what works were carried out?
Okay, as I said, all the windows and doors were replaced. The attic was insulated to a higher degree than what was there. The walls were pumped with insulation. There was no insulation at all in the walls, which was actually quite surprising, given that the house is a relatively modern house. Mm-hmm. There was a heat pump put in. We replaced the gas boiler that was here, which was a relatively new gas boiler, with a heat pump. And there was vents put into the bathrooms and kitchen, mechanical ventilation put into the bathrooms and kitchen. And that's essentially what was done. Yeah, that was there. And we also then, in addition, we put solar panels on the roof, and put a storage battery, and an electric car charger as well in. No, and that's for a future electric car, which I haven't got yet.
You're manifesting it.
That's one of the next things to be done.
Okay, great. And you renovated your bathroom as well.
And bathrooms were renovated, and one of the best things that I think we have done is the showers. We put in these drench showers, but they're powered. They're great showers to have, I must say.
And you just step into them. There's no stepping over a bath or anything. You just walk straight in.
No, straight in, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, they're fantastic. They're really good, yeah.
Great. Okay, so you needed to upgrade all of the windows, the doors. You got the walls pumped. So how long did that take? And were you happy to not be living here at the time? Was there a lot of mess? Was there a lot of construction about?
Yeah, there was. There was a lot of disruption. There was people in and out as well. And there were several different trades involved. Envirobead were the main contractor. But there was several different trades. Like, there would have been mechanical, there would have been electrical, and other various trades as well. So there was people in and out the whole time. And it wasn't all done in the same couple of weeks, and it wasn't done one after another. There was, you know, the construction industry works like that. So it was done. We started work, I would imagine, probably in November, early November, end of October, early November. And the works weren't complete until mid-February. Okay. And then we moved in.
And you're a structural engineer yourself. Mm. Are you a contractor's worst nightmare? Are you arriving at the door, checking out all the work they're doing, telling them that you would have done it differently?
No, no, not really. I mean, these guys are specialists in what they do. If you see something which is obviously not right or you're not happy with, yeah, you say it. But you say it in a nice way to make sure that, you know, you don't get their back up.
And did you ever come around and give them a dig out?
In which way?
In literal, or did you ever get your hands dirty or say, look, I'll help you out here?
There was a few things, all right, which, you help out with. But not a whole lot, no, because they're just what they do and they're good at it, you know. So I was more directing how things should be done. You know, that's what I've always done over the years. So
give the orders.
Give me orders, yeah.
So when you got the BEUR after the works were carried out and it went up to an A1, were you surprised? Did you expect as high as a result as that?
I was actually, to be honest with you, because I think I was expecting to get the grants. I think from memory, you have to get to a B2, from a D1 to a B2 to actually make sure the grants were paid. So to when the post-works BER was done, to see it as A1, I was very surprised at that. Yeah, I must admit. Because A1 is the best you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. It's basically a brand new house.
Yeah, it's a brand new house. And you do hear of issues with brand new houses and A1 ratings and that they get too hot or there's other issues. But at the moment, I don't have any issues here.
Great. So the house is energy efficient now. It's A1 and you moved in February. So you had those few months where it was still quite cold, but the house felt warm. Tell me what it was like to move into an A-rated house in those really cold February months.
Well, I must admit, they say that when you're out of the house, you keep the temperature at 16 degrees. And when you're in the house, you keep it at 20 degrees. And it's just a little dial that you just turn up the dial when you come in. But so coming into the house at 16 degrees, yeah, instead of coming into a cold house, which I had been doing for a number of years, you come into a nice warm house. It's fantastic. It's a great feeling, I must admit. So it's lovely.
Mm-hmm. And bills aren't as high as they would have been in your mum's house when you're the heating on all day.
Yeah. So like previously you'd have gas bills and you'd have electricity bills. And they were exceptionally high. So I've had three bills, my three energy bills. I've no gas anymore now. It's all electrical cooking and electrical heating. I've had three bills so far since February, and two have been in credit. And one, the only one was actually quite small. So it's so far so good. Now I have to go through the colder winter months coming up again when the winter starts. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. But at the moment, it's excellent. And the solar panels are generating electricity and basically putting my account into credit.
Great. Yeah, and I'm looking around your kitchen and I can see you've your dishwasher, washing machine, dryer, oven, robot hoover. They're all running for free, basically.
They're all running for free at the moment. Yeah, it's great.
How's the robot hoover working out? Would you recommend one?
Brilliant. All you do is press the button and leave it off.
Does it mop as well?
It does mop as well, yeah.
Oh my God, I need to get one.
It talks to you as well, so it's like an independent R2-D2.
How about sustainability in your day-to-day life? How sustainable are you?
Well, I mean, yeah, I would like to think I am sustainable. I certainly believe that climate change is a huge issue that has to be addressed. As I said, I have a car charger. I haven't got an electric car yet, but that's the plan, is to buy next car. Purchased is to be electric, and as I mentioned to you before, down in Skull, where my partner lives in her house there, we've planted an awful lot of trees. We planted about 500 trees in around her garden. Now she has a big garden which can take it, so that's exciting to see that and see how they work out.
And you're also hoping to travel a lot by train, and I know, like, not consciously, but that is quite a sustainable decision to make as well.
It is. I enjoy traveling. Like, we've gone on holidays now. The last 2 years we've gone by boat to France and down to Spain, and I really, really enjoy that. I mean, I've always loved the sea and I love traveling by boat. So we took the car on those two occasions, but you know, going forward we'd like to travel Europe more by train, just to see the place by train. yeah, as I said, when you're flying from A to B, it's just very difficult to see anything.
When was the moment that you stepped into this home and you were like, okay, this is mine? Did you make a cup of tea and sit down in your favourite spot and say, okay, here I am, I'm at home?
I suppose when we moved in, obviously the first day we moved in, there was a moving of furniture, which is fairly traumatic, moving house, as everybody knows. So once we got everything done and we were sitting down at the table where we are now, and we opened a bottle of champagne, that was probably when we realised that this is it, we've done it. Yeah.
Is this your dream home? Is this your forever home? Do you see any more moves or renovations in your future?
I hope not. I hope this is the end of it now. So I've had a few houses over the years, and so hopefully this is the last one.
You've saved the best for last.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Great.
That's it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with some fantastic tips from interior designers and podcasters, Kate O'Driscoll and Jenny Sheehan. If you'd like to find out more about any of the grants or schemes mentioned on this episode, you can head to the SEAI website and there are links in the show notes. Finally, we also have a special bonus episode on the feed, all about green loans and finance, so check that out if you're looking at how to finance your big plans.